Accession number 13629, Reel 3.
Mr. Hosey, Reel 3. I think you've got the route that your unit took in the pursuit westwards after Alamein.
Yes, I've got the dates, really, and the mileages of the 8th Army advance. We were obviously a day or two behind. These are the forward dates. Alamein was from the 23rd of October to the 4th of November. On the 8th of November, we're at Mersa Matruh, which is a 120-mile advance. 3 days later at Saloum, which is another 140 miles. 2 days later at Tobruk, and that's about 80 miles. 3 days after that at Derna, which is 100 miles from Tobruk. And then 4 days after that, Benghazi, another 140 miles. That, in fact, is where I left the unit to go back to Oktu. But the 8th Army carried on, and on the 28th of January 1943, entered Tripoli, which is another 600 miles from Benghazi and roughly 1,200 miles from Alexandria.
Do you remember experiencing the famous rainstorms that occurred at one point in that?
Yes. Yes, one particular rainstorm, we were actually put out of action because our guns were in a depression, which flooded. I mean, 2 years without seeing rain, and you don't cater for it, you know. And we were in a depression, and that filled with water, and actually put us out of action until we got the guns towed out and dried out and cleaned up, you know.
You mean they were just swamped in mud?
Yes, sand, wet sand, really. Yes. There's one afterthought about Tobruk, if I could mention it. Silly,
okay.
Silly one. But I worked for Whitbread and Company, the brewers. And the London brewers sent out 6 bottles of beer for each of the gannet defenders of Tobruk, which arrived, obviously, after the siege had been lifted. And by sheer coincidence, I got 5 bottles of Whitbread Double Brown sent by my brewery. One bottle had disappeared en route, but things have a way of doing that. I wrote to them, and they actually put a note in the Whitbread magazine about this coincidence, you know. One of the odd things that happened.
Now, one thing that we need to go back to, I think, right to the beginning, is when you were in the TA before the war, because I think that all was not well with the men's morale concerning financial recompense at that time.
Yes, well, the situation there was that a territorial unit, when mobilised, was entitled to £5 a man to help in any financial crisis through the breadwinner, if you like, being reduced from his civilian pay, which was usually between £2.15 and £3 a week, coming down to army pay, which for a married man was 28 shillings. Single man was 14 shillings. And of the married man's pay, he was given 7 shillings and his wife got 21 shillings. Well, we were at camp, as were some other territorial units, when the war started. And some bright irk somewhere in the civil service made the decision that because these units were at camp, they had, in fact, already been mobilised. And so it wasn't necessary to pay those units the £5 a head. And that's always made me extremely angry. The average chap in the TA was married and had wife and kids. Nobody owned their own home then. They were all in rented accommodation. The £5 was designed to help with the transition. Not getting it, we had good blokes who'd volunteer for the TA, who'd volunteered their free evenings, volunteer weekend camps. And they were going AWOL because their wife and kids were in dire trouble and they had to go and sort it out with the landlord or whatever deal they could come to, or arrange for the wife and kids to go and stay with granny and get the furniture installed, all that sort of thing. All through some bloke deciding not to give them that £5 to which they were, in my view, absolutely entitled.
Was anything eventually done about it?
No, nothing at all.
Yes, just going back to the Tobruk siege, I was a bit surprised at what you said about how clean you were.
Well, lice we didn't have, but one Italian legacy was fleas. The sand was hopping with voracious fleas, hungry as anything. Once your skin was sunburnt, they weren't a problem. But any newcomer, reinforcers coming up, who were white-skinned, were bitten so badly that we had people evacuated on the next destroyer with not flea bites, but flea bites. They were bitten so badly that they had to be returned back to a hospital in the Delta area.
You mean the fleas discriminated?
Yeah, they didn't like brown skin. Once you were sunburned, you were all right. Yes.
What made you think it was the Italians who were responsible?
Well, you only had to walk round Tobruk town to see the state of hygiene and everything. They also left, of course, their cats, and these went wild, and they grew. They were almost like cougars, feeding on desert rats and so on, and vicious things. The other thing about Tobruk is you've got bomb-happy explosive, you know, something you use most casually. And the place was littered with grenades and all sorts of ammunition. And if a cat came too close, you just picked up the nearest grenade that was laying around and threw it at the cat. The other real menace, and possibly a worse lot, was sand, which was very dusty sand. And the desert winds, when it got up, the Khamsin, could blow for several days. And it got everywhere. It was up your nostrils, in your eyes. Getting your food, however you tried, you couldn't stop. Between having the food put in a Dixie and covering up, you couldn't stop sand getting in there. So you're always eating sand and breathing sand and spitting sand. And the wind at times was so strong that it picked up any sheet of corrugated iron, and there were hundreds laying around. And these would come whistling through 5 or 6 feet high off the ground, and we had several ropes injured by corrugated iron, windborne corrugated iron.
Did anybody suffer infections from just getting sand into them?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Did you like being in the desert? Because some people say they liked it.
Yes. I don't know, it's a strange feeling, but at times it's so quiet. And, you know, you walk out with your spade, a few hundred yards to do your business, you know, and if there's nothing going on, it really is quite a special feeling. One very sensible thing the army did, on the retreat from Tobruk, we'd been up the desert for a long time, about a year, and obviously had drawn almost no pay, there was nothing to buy. So we all had a lot of money to come. But they stopped the unit at Mersa Matru, where there was a staging camp. And we had no duties at all for several days. We had sort of all-day use of the naffy. And blokes would just buy half a dozen bottles of Australian lager, Tui's it was, and lay down in their tent. We were in bell tents in this staging camp, and get paralytic. And we had several days of this. And by the time we were ready to move on back to civilization, where we could spend some money, the edge had gone off everyone's desire for drink. So I thought that was very sensible.
You said this was the retreat from Tobruk. Yeah, it must have been June 1942.
Yeah, June the 6th, that was the retreat. It took us a while to get back down, but that's quite an adventurous journey. And then we refitted, had some leave, and went up to Alamein.
Now, I think when you finally left the Royal Artillery, you were in contact with some chaps from Bechuana Land and Basuto Land. Can you tell me about that, please?
Yes. This struck me as being one of the most cynical things in the war. Apparently, a number of Bechuanas and Basutos had volunteered to join the army and fight in the war, and had been used for pioneering duties, building, digging, that sort of thing. And with political pressure coming up from South Africa, several of us were ordered to take these chaps into the Syrian desert and let them fire the guns and be photographed so that they could send photographs back saying your chaps are sort of fighting for the cause. And that really, I thought, was cynical and extreme and made me pretty fed up with anti-aircraft.
What were these Bechuanas and Basutos like as men?
I got on very well with them. I had a high opinion of some of them, and one chap, Sergeant Odorili, was a chief in his own tribe, a highly intelligent man. We had many good conversations. He spoke five languages, two African tongues, Afrikaans, English and French. And he was a very pleasant and intelligent man, and I thought used rather shamefully. One amusing thing was one of the officers, when we were moving up the coast road of Syria and Lebanon to go into the desert, one of the officers who was newly out for England reconnoitred the route ahead, came back and said to these Bechuanas, we're shortly going to go through a section of road which is a tribute to the engineering skill of the Western forces, and you're going to be very impressed. The road follows the coast, goes through several tunnels, and I'm sure you're going to be impressed. Sergeant Odorini looked at them and said, well, sir, we may not be too impressed. After all, we built it.
Was it true?
Yeah, absolutely true.